Douglas, on behalf of the appellant Fausto Diaz-Lozano, I'm intending to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Diaz-Lozano challenges the denial of his suppression motion and raises 4 sentencing issues on appeal. In his motion to suppress, he challenged the government's installation of GPS tracking devices and the extended monitoring of him over an extended period. We recognized in the briefs that this court's decision in Pineda-Moreno resolves much of his suppression claim. And I would like to, while I've argued in the briefs that the decision is erroneous and should be reheard in bank, I'd like to focus now on my second argument there, that the court should remand with instructions from the government to provide additional information on the number of tracking devices, when they were used, and the circumstances of how long that they were monitoring Mr. Diaz.
What's the relevancy of that?
Well, it's hard to determine that when the government hasn't informed us of what additional GPS tracking devices they've placed on. It's true that there's no direct evidence that they introduced at trial of any, but it is very possible, and it's hard to do a fruit of the poisonous tree analysis without knowing exactly what information.
I think the thrust of the question, or at least my question, is what could be poisonous about it in terms of of the exclusionary rule, given Pineda-Moreno? In other words, if there are 5 devices, why is it still covered by Pineda-Moreno?
Well, Pineda-Moreno did not determine that if a device was placed on someone's personal, on their private property, that was okay under the binding appellate precedent at the time. They specifically reserved that for a future day. What they decided was that binding appellate precedent.
I read in your argument in that regard, and my reaction was, well, that's not really a GPS problem. In other words, if somebody goes on somebody's private property, then that's a separate problem. I mean, that is, which would be covered by Pineda-Moreno, but which we have no reason to think happened here.
Well, we don't know. That's the problem. We do know that the government's, one of their officers said that they placed GPS units more than once, but they only disclosed it one time. And so, Mr. Pineda-Moreno was believed that they were tracking him for an extended period of time back when he was even crossing the border in February of 2010. And so we don't know. And so because the government never disclosed this information, it was never really the grounds to be able to challenge
him. Suppose they would have violated an ethical duty. Maybe we can ask them flat out when they stand up whether there is such a thing. But it seems to me that if they went out to the private property and put some device on it and it had any connection at all to the ultimate conviction, even if it were introduced, they would have had an obligation to disclose it. And if they didn't, they've got a problem, but they didn't.
Well, they may have decided that any evidence that they obtained for it, they did not use at trial, was not part of its case, was their determination may have been it wasn't exculpatory. They were not under an obligation to.
There wasn't anything else that they said
to that. I don't believe they what they said was there was no evidence introduced at trial in any way that was.
Flat out, there wasn't any.
We can ask them. So let me address the sentencing issues, and specifically the first 3 sentencing issues. The first one is that the government included in the guideline analysis 5 pounds of actual methamphetamine regarding a transaction on April 19, 2010, when officers only seized 1.5 pounds during a traffic stop. They got to the additional amount, the total 5 pounds, based on a single reference in a wiretap call. During an earlier wiretap call, the participants were discussing shirts and the delivery of two or two and a half shirts, and there was one single reference later to a delivery of there were actually going to be five shirts delivered. Why is that not enough? It's not enough because we don't know whether or not what type of substance was delivered, whether it was cocaine or methamphetamine. We don't know the purity of the amount. And because we don't know either one of those, it's kind of speculative to reach the 5 pound.
Was it 98% purity of what was delivered?
There was 1.5 pounds that was delivered for that exit.
Which was 98% pure.
Right.
And the negotiations regarding that, or the discussions that you're talking about, were leading up to that, were they not?
Yes.
Okay. So, at this point, it seems like it's a question of fact that the district court determined that there were 5 pounds based on the reference to the shirt in the phone calls, although the wiretap. So, would we not be reviewing for clear error?
I think clear error is appropriate, but I think that the error is clear here where there isn't sufficient evidence to make that kind of an inference. When there's been prior discussions and transactions regarding cocaine, when we don't know the quantity or the substance that was actually delivered, it wasn't sufficient. The second sentencing issue is that the district court erred in adding a two-level enhancement for possession of a firearm when Mr. Diaz-Lozano was never found with possessing a firearm. The probation officer, in my opinion, correctly found that the enhancement was inapplicable.
But the firearm was in the Gilroy house?
Yes.
Totally.
Yes. Yes.
And there was evidence that there was a stipulation that he didn't know the people who were arrested in the
Gilroy house. Correct. Correct.
I mean, but is the standard, I mean, this one, I'm following the term law, it seems that we have to determine whether it was reasonably foreseeable that the defendant appellant here would anticipate that there might be a weapon in the stash house in Gilroy. Is that
correct? Two parts to it, whether it's reasonably foreseeable and whether it's within the scope of the jointly agreed criminal activity. The only evidence we have here is that he had a phone number with an area code for San Jose and had referred to his source as San Jose. It would be a little, I think the government would have a much stronger position if there was some evidence that he knew there was this gigantic stash house. And then maybe it's more reasonable to assume that it would be protected with firearms. But in this case, it's as far as the evidence showed, Mr. Diaz-Lozano could have determined that they were delivering 1 pound or certain amounts of cocaine or methamphetamine from different places in the San Jose area.
Ultimately, there's 600 pounds of drugs found as part of this drug operation.
In Gilroy.
Now, it seems like the sheer scope of the drug trafficking operation here might support that it was reasonably foreseeable for this defendant to know that the Gilroy stash house would have a weapon to protect that kind of.
I think if he knew that there was a stash house that had 610 pounds of
it. He had to know, based on what he was doing, there were other parts to this.
Certainly he had associations with other people, and he had a source of drugs that was delivering quantities of methamphetamine cocaine.
Gilroy house, was that somebody went from his house to the Gilroy house that they followed? Is that what happened?
They followed someone back after they went to his house to the Gilroy house. And they knew the house was on Roof Row. They knew the approximate location in Gilroy.
They knew him because they followed him.
They followed him back, someone else.
Right. Now, the judge or the government, I'm not sure which, just made the surmise that when he said
right. Maybe it was maybe the general San Jose area, but yes, there's no evidence that he knew of the existence of this stash house. In fact,
something that changed the number. Was there any basis for any inference that he knew that there was something going on in Kilroy?
No. No, in fact, it's most likely that he wouldn't have known because he would try to keep the existence of that large of a stash house to as small a number of people as possible unless someone would have a need to know. And that's why the argument, I believe, is insufficient to apply the two-level enhancement as a probation officer determined. The third sentencing issue is that the court erred in applying a three-level managerial role enhancement based on, because it was insufficient evidence that he exercised control or supervised other individuals. The district court found the enhancement applied on the basis of one person that was involved in marijuana cultivation that says he was working for Mr. Diaz-Lizana. But even if that is true, that would not support a three-level enhancement for organizational role, only a two-level enhancement, because the marijuana conspiracy was entirely separate and only involved three people, not five or more.
But this is the guidelines also talk about whether it's otherwise extensive. I thought the argument was made that even if it was five, you think this was otherwise extensive.
The guidelines do say that. The district court did not make any finding it was otherwise extensive, and I don't believe it was. It was a simple marijuana cultivation.
I mean, it's a difference of one level, is that right?
Yes.
Given, I mean, if we assume that the two conspiracies, you can't combine it, I'm not quite sure why you can't combine the two conspiracies for this purpose. Is there any case law or anything that says you can't?
I'm not aware of it, but I think that when you look at conspiracies, you actually tend to look at them separately. They're actually charged separately. This wasn't a case where they charged one overall conspiracy involving marijuana and methamphetamine.
One was a growing operation.
Right.
Pretty far to the north, and the other was this trafficking operation.
Right, and different individuals, different locations.
What facts did the district judge say about this enhancement?
He applied it only on the basis of the one person in the marijuana cultivation, Bermudez, who said that he worked for, was tending the gardens for Mr. Diaz-Lizana, and that was sufficient to apply the enhancement.
The other conspiracy seemed pretty extensive.
Well,
one was a fairly small marijuana growing operation.
Yes, and the other one, I believe there's no evidence that he exercised control or managed or supervised any other individuals. So it's been essentially a broker directed transactions.
And you think the magistrate would be able to say that this court judge may consider that?
I think that since we had a full and fair hearing the first time in sentencing, the court should make the determination that only at most a two-level enhancement applies. I guess I'll turn
it. But it goes back to district court for resentencing.
You're right. I mean, ultimately, it's a 3553 analysis based on the fact
that if it were to remain for whatever reason, could that district court judge consider everything else and basically be able to sentence the proceeding they know of and perhaps consider the other conspiracy? Maybe confined to just the other conspiracy.
I guess my position would be that on that one enhancement, the government presented its evidence, the court made its finding. If the evidence is insufficient, I think the court could determine that the evidence is insufficient as presented, and there's no evidence that he exercised control or supervised anyone in the larger methamphetamine conspiracy. So that would be the other alternative, yes.
That would be helpful to your client.
It would be more helpful if the court ruled that the enhancement didn't apply.
Question, though, do you think, because you run the risk, when we send it back It's just a level. I don't know that it would be. It's not a material difference here in light of what the sentence received. And it's a one level. So I'm just trying to figure out, is there a harmless error application here for this?
So my position on that would be, first of all, there's a general presumption against increasing the sentence on remand for vindictive after an appeal, unless there's new evidence or new circumstances or something new conduct in prison, which I don't think is here.
Last year, Ms. Anderson, essentially there's almost no such thing as harmless error in this. There's a miscalculation.
Okay,
Did you argue this
conspiracy down below? Well, I wasn't the attorney. The attorney argued that there was no evidence for the enhancement. And the district, there was some discussion, I think, about.
Can you look maybe and tell me, you know, if that was specifically
yours? Okay, thank you.
May it please the court, Michael Beckwith on behalf of the United States. I was trial counsel in this case. Your Honor, I'd like to go right to an issue that we were just touching on, that is the issue of sentencing, and specifically the defendant's connection to the house in Gilroy.
Do you have any knowledge of Gilroy at all?
Yes, Your Honor, we have evidence in the trial record that he told Detective Robles that he went to the house and got 10 pounds from that house. We have his name in ledgers.
I thought that was
It is in the record, Your Honor. We also have.
Went there, sorry.
Yes, Your Honor. That he went to that. He calls, of course, the house in San Jose. But he says, I went there and picked up 10 pounds in the past. We also have his name.
How do we know it was the house in San Jose?
Your Honor, because we have his name in ledgers that were in the house in Gilroy.
He was there.
Your Honor, he is. The court made a specific factual finding that in light of. The house in San Jose.
What's
the house in Gilroy? We don't know. We just. Based on the fact that his name was on the ledger, based on the fact that when he was on wiretap calls talking about obtaining drugs from the house in San Jose, those drugs came to his house and then they went back to. They followed them back to the house in Gilroy. That's correct, Your Honor.
And what's the standard the government has to prove by preponderance?
It's a preponderance standard, Your Honor, that we believe was clearly met.
So it's a preponderance, and then we review for clear error.
That's correct. Your Honor, unless the court has questions on that.
What about just maybe the interest on the evidentiary hearing question?
Yes, Your Honor.
Your brief has a slightly cryptic statement, which I did find, that says that the government is not aware of any evidence that.
Yes, Your Honor. We are unaware of any. We are unaware of any other evidence.
Does that mean you're unaware of any other surveillance, or you're unaware of about? I mean, were you measuring? I guess I want to know. Were you purposely measuring your words to allow for the possibility that there was other surveillance, but it didn't lead to evidence? I mean, your opinion.
Your Honor,
there was other surveillance. I couldn't quite tell what you were saying.
Your Honor, I tell you now, we do not. We are unaware, completely unaware of any other surveillance evidence. We have, there's no evidence in the record of that, and we are unaware of it.
I know there's no evidence, but yes. you're representing that you don't know of any.
We do not know of any.
What about the managerial role?
Yes, Your Honor. With regard to that, I do believe if we go to remand, there is a risk of actually a four-level enhancement if the court were fined to look at the methamphetamine and marijuana conspiracies and say that, yes, clearly the methamphetamine
was. That's not a job, really, you know, to deal with what would happen on remand. We have to decide whether there was a basis here for the three-level enhancement. I'm a little bit confused about this. You have Bermuda as your song, you believe that curse was managed by the defendant, right? But you need five or something otherwise extensive. Can you explain to me how we reached that level?
Yes, Your Honor, with Solario.
Solario was the other conspiracy.
Yes, Your Honor, it was
the meth conspiracy, not the marijuana conspiracy. Are we able to combine the two and make some plans, so to speak?
Yes, well, Your Honor, if we take the defense argument and actually separate it, which I don't recall the argument below, but let's assume it's there. The Solario is part of that more extensive methamphetamine conspiracy. And on, I believe it's the 21st at the meeting at Walmart, Mr. Diaz has given methamphetamine to Solario and directs him to give that methamphetamine.
I guess I have a point for you, and I apologize. What confuses me is that it seems that the district court judge predicated his three-level enhancement solely in regard to the marijuana conspiracy and the mutants involved in that conspiracy, and that he did not make any determination at all about whether there was any enhancement by reason of the meth conspiracy by marijuana.
Your Honor, I'm not sure that the district court made such a fine cut in saying there were two conspiracies and Bermudez is one, but clearly the record indicates that he focused on Bermudez because Bermudez is the easy
thing.
It's
the simple thing.
Yes,
it's pretty clear. But you know, then you go to take Solario with a different conspiracy. There's no finding made by the district court judge. You're going to add the two together to collect the fee, come up with the requisite, the expensive activity of the 40 people. How can we get that set the law?
Your Honor, well, I'm not clear that there are two. There are, in fact, just two conspiracies. I mean, there are.
That's what they were charged as two conspiracies. Is that not the case?
That's true. That's true. But effectively.
Is that not sufficient for present purposes? And nobody ever alleged that there was one conspiracy and they only alleged there were two conspiracies.
I suppose in theory we could have charged one conspiracy with two objectives.
And just from what they actually were, they didn't seem to have that much to do with each other. I mean, one was this large trafficking operation, the other was growing some marijuana up in the hills.
Your Honor, under Alexander, the court, we can see that the court focused on Bermudez. But under Alexander, this court can make a ruling or can uphold an enhancement on any basis of record. And here you have Solario in the methamphetamine conspiracy being directed.
You don't have to say that. We can make a factual finding.
No, you can support, you can affirm the district court's application.
The district court didn't even make a finding that he was supervising Solario, did he?
No, there's no discussion.
That's true. We can make that finding.
You can affirm based on the record, yes, Your Honor, under Alexander.
That's making the finding.
No, you will only be affirming that the application is appropriately applied.
You're affirming that the district court judge was correct.
Yes.
He is of the reason in finding that the three-level enhancement was warranted on the marijuana conspiracy.
That's exactly
this. If we were only dealing with the marijuana conspiracy, would you be willing to concede that there's not sufficient evidence to support the three-level enhancement?
Yes, Your Honor, we would.
So you really need to tack on Solario, which to me is very little about Solario in the record here, and you need to have five or otherwise extensive. So your argument would be that if you consider the meth conspiracy, that was otherwise extensive.
Yes, sir.
There's a basis for that in the record, is what you're claiming, right?
That's correct. We also believe there's a basis to believe that Diaz directed Solario in the context of that conspiracy.
Will the five people be relying upon the otherwise extensive product?
Your Honor, it would be otherwise extensive, and he's a manager, a low-level manager within that extensive conspiracy. So that would get us to three, as opposed to
the otherwise extensive on the meth conspiracy.
Yes, Your Honor, I don't believe that's going to be an international drug conspiracy. I don't think that's going to be difficult to make.
Well, I'm troubled by the mix and match, and quite frankly, I don't see any case law that says that's okay to do. You know, many cases are, and so what's that?
Your Honor, I'm not aware of that.
Where did he get that sentence? I can't remember in the sentencing guideline range.
Well, Your Honor, this is what I wanted to come back to, that the guidelines in this case were life. If we make this distinction between two and three level enhancement, we're bringing the guidelines down by one level. And in this case, the district court expressly pegged this defendant's sentence to the man in Gilroy, placing him just above it at 210 months. So
what was his range?
His range was life. And so
it was life.
It was life, and he came down to 17.
He pegged it to what? I'm sorry.
He pegged it to the men in Gilroy, Your Honor.
Oh.
And so those men had sentences in the high 100s, 190, 170, I believe. And he gave this defendant a sentence of 210 months. So he departed from life, it's excessive, a 12-year departure. It's very unlikely that anything's going to change if we do come back, and it's possible that
I'll share this with you because I'm a district court judge. I've had a couple of these situations over the years with the Second Circuit, and my colleagues may not have done the same thing, but I always get them a little bit of a break on the remand. So, I'm just joking with them, you know.
Also, can we go back to the gun for a minute? Okay.
Yes, sir.
Assume that the Gilroy house is the San Jose house, along with the, I mean, it seems a little
obviously three transactions from the house. We know there's a two-pound transaction that's captured on a wiretap. We're talking about bringing two shirts from the Gilroy house to Sacramento. There's a five-pound transaction.
But he knew that it was given to Gilroy house.
Yes, sir. He's calling the Gilroy house. In fact, we know the Gilroy house.
Calling what? The phone number that's in the Gilroy house or person that's in the Gilroy house?
Yes, sir.
We have a stipulation that he didn't know any of the people who were picked up at the Gilroy house.
Well, he didn't. The stipulation, to be very precise, was that he did not know the three people that were arrested there.
Right.
That's absolutely correct. But there was no stipulation that he didn't have any involvement with the Gilroy house, wasn't aware of the Gilroy house. In fact, as we know, his name is in ledgers found at the Gilroy house. And it
must be the people in the Gilroy house, if they are the center of the operation, would be keeping ledgers about him. But that doesn't mean that doesn't have anything to do with whether he knew the scope of the operation in the Gilroy house.
Well, we believe he did, Your Honor, because the center of the operation is actually in Mexico. And when he called into the Gilroy house and asked for methamphetamine, the Gilroy house told him that, no, you can't have it. And so Mr. Diaz called into Mexico, got the authorization, arranged for the distribution, changed, and then they brought methamphetamine to him. So he has not only knowledge of the house, but enough pull within this organization to get its distribution authorization changed.
And that's enough under our case law, assuming all that, for him to foresee that there's a gun. People he doesn't know, and so on. Just because it's a heat operation, period, the end, or other reason.
We think all of the factors that we've been talking about, the phone calls, the wiretaps, the surveillance,
is that there was a big operation in the Gilroy house.
Which defendant is regularly telling Undercover Ross that he is a part of
But I still want to know, is that enough under our case law?
It is, Your Honor.
For him to foresee that there was a gun there.
A drug trafficker of this level of experience, yes, absolutely. And there's two more factual points that we haven't quite touched on. One is that the methamphetamine in this case was much of it was blue, which at the time was brand new in the market and very, very distinct. When this methamphetamine was seized in Sacramento, part of it was blue, part of it was white. When the methamphetamine was seized in Gilroy, part of it was blue, part of it was white. And both of those were 98% purity. And so that's another connection that the defendant has.
So I'm assuming for present purposes that he had enough connection to the Gilroy house, but the question is it sufficient just by itself that he was getting his drugs from a big operation?
Yes, sir, we believe it is. We believe those facts. We established those by preponderance of sentencing. We believe the court made clear factual findings, and those findings were due to clear error. And in light of these facts, there was no clear error regarding the foreseeability of this.
Can we get what was in the ledger that was found in the Gilroy's name was in there, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
In what capacity? What did it say?
So it would be something along the lines of 2 pounds, Fausto Diaz, 2 pounds, Fausto, 1 pound, Fausto. And so, this isn't banking level accounting. This is narcotics accounting, and that's from our standpoint, that's rare to see, and I think incredibly persuasive. Your Honor, I'll point out that in the case of the suppression motion, the officers here were acting within the context of the law as it existed then, and suppression of the warrant in this case would serve no deterrent value. MacGyver was in place, Hubbard was in place, and this was a short-term monitoring case. When the vehicle was tracked, it was less than a day, better part of an afternoon, from point A to point B, exactly on all fours with Hubbard, which has been in existence for over 30 years. This is not a long-term monitoring case. This is we have one tracker in this case, and it was monitored for the better part of an afternoon from Home Depot straight to a marijuana grow. And we believe that in light of MacGyver, in light of Hubbard, and the other cases that existed at the time, the officers acted clearly within the parameters of law then, and suppression would be unnecessary now. Let's support us for their questions. Submit. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Just to answer Judge Riggio's question, the defense attorney in his briefs argue that the enhancement did not apply really based only on the methamphetamine conspiracy. And then when it got to the sentencing, the prosecutor also pushed the alternative theory that he would be eligible for a supervisory enhancement based on the marijuana cultivation, and that the court made the finding only on the marijuana cultivation. And the other last point I would like to bring up is on remand, if the court does remand for resentencing, we now have this new guideline amendment that reduces all the guideline levels by 2 levels that I think would apply to resentencing. So that even with a 1 or 2 level for reduction, and then you add that 2 level guideline amendment reduction, I don't think there's much of a risk that the court would go above the sentence he imposed the first time, and some decent chance he would go below